According to the March 21st incarnation of Ian Lennox's Facebook piece, every morning I give my cats Ollie and Oboe a big breakfast and they wander off for a good lie down. Oboe goes out like a light, but Ollie always lies with his eyes only half closed. I think he's planning to take over the Labour Party. Hey, everyone else is. Ah, heavy political comment from Ollie and Oboe in force there. You know, clearly we move from Frodo the sleeping dog to Ollie the sleeping cat.
The half-sleeping cat.
The half-sleeping cat, exactly.
So he can half-watch a film.
Nice. Or, in the immortal words of a character from the politically incorrect TV series of the 1970s, Love Thy Neighbour, Jacko, a la barf. Sorry. Do you remember that series, Bert?
No, I'm not older than that.
Yeah, fine, okay. YouTube can work wonders in every sense. Onwards ever onwards. Apart from obviously looking after Ollie and Oboe, where exactly do we find your good self this morning? I mean, we've already had Gabriella making breakfast for Frodo.
It's like Groundhog Day with me, I'm afraid.
Is it?
I'm waiting for the roofer to arrive because there's another leak after a storm.
Another leak?
Oh, yeah. He'll be out that door.
The bell could ring at any moment and whoosh, he'll be gone.
I've had more leaks than the White House.
Oh, I see what you did there. Nice, you know. He wasn't a journalist for The Guardian in Manchester for nothing before he actually became one of Tiny's television's finest producers, the likes of which even Catherine Crookston said, I'll only be interviewed by that nice Ian Lennox, that's all. At least she might have said it. I'm sure she said it somewhere along the base. What are you doing at present, Ian, by the way? You seem to be banging, crashing buckets.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm making myself some toast and
that's not the most noise. I mean, you know, Gabriella was making her tea one-handed, and there seems to be less noise with that than obviously...
No, I'm waiting patiently for you to start playing records. I'm a bite of this.
Straight in there, demanding that we actually get
straight. He now wants the country music. His tune has changed.
Well, we have to say, hats off to Dawson Rains, because, and Camo, because Tessa... Snart, Midweek Drivette, etc. Doesn't do mornings these days, I don't know, still, what the heck.
Oh, she's on Facebook, Tessa.
Yeah, she is.
she comes, I got a message for her.
That's the sort of person she is. She's from Glinton, of course, just outside Peterborough. She is effectively going to see Dawson Rains in concert this coming Friday in Nottingham, because she's going to be doing her first official interview with Dawson Rains for the next edition of Sound and Country Vision.
Yeah.
You, of course, might turn around and have a listen to Dawson Rains with his little number and say, well, that was rubbish, give up, you know, on the whole sort of system. But it's The Night Ain't Even Over Yet is the title.
Right.
Are you ready for Dawson Rains, Ian Lennox?
Yes.
Picked them up just off the side of the road. Girl, I'm coming in hot. You pick the spot anywhere you want to go. We got a clear sky above. One hell of a time waiting on us. Let's take it slow and no need to rush, you ready? I'll kick your feet up lazy. Hang them out the window, baby. Just you and me flying down the gravel road, radio dialing. Getting midnight crazy. What you say now, baby? Love on the edge like this. Already falling in. I swear we thought we'd get. And the night ain't even over yet. Up ahead, if we keep on, we're bound to find. A drive in, a take out, a little scene, a crowd beneath the pine. And we may just have to part, but still a few moments in the dark. Just you and me flying down a gravel road, radio dialing.
what you say now, maybe. We love on the edge like this, already falling in. That's where we thought we'd get, and the night ain't even over yet. If you get that feeling and the feeling's getting stronger, hang them out the window, baby. Just you and me flying down a gravel road, radio dialing, getting midnight crazy. What you say now, maybe? We love on the edge like this, already falling in. That's where we thought we'd get, and the night ain't even over. No, the night.
Time round, Holly, what did you make of Dawson Rains?
I'm glad that was played again. Uh-huh.
First time for yourself, Hannah. What about yourself?
It was very good. I actually really enjoyed that one.
We obviously should have got a second ticket for yourself, clearly. I should have had a word. Tessa needs to obviously ask and negotiate that whole sequence. I think her parents are going as well. Great stuff. What about yourself, Ben Lewis?
Yeah, it's all right. I mean, I'm not a massive country fan anyway, as everyone knows.
He's becoming more like Ian on a day-by-day basis.
Right? Yeah, it was all right. It was adequate enough.
It was
adequate. Yeah,
and Ian, now you've had your toast, did it help the digestion?
Yes, it did. As a comedian once told me that what made other people laugh was... Sorry, what made people, the comedians funny was other people laughing. So if you sat among an audience of people laughing, you enjoyed it. And I think if you went to a concert and you saw fans of theirs really enjoying their music, it would help. You'd really enjoy it yourself. And I found, yeah, it's quite a good bouncy song. And, yeah, I enjoyed it, yeah. I think our friend will enjoy the concert.
Yeah, Hannah, you're obviously right. You know, it is working. I mean, you dial back and actually listen to some of the podcast from a couple of years ago when you start playing Ian. It was almost as though you were forcing him to eat some kind of vegetable that he doesn't like. But now, sort of chilled out in this message.
Good analogy, yes.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Working through that. Anyway, we'd just like to wish Lukas Podolski the very best, because clearly it was nice to see yesterday that the English national side managed to successfully grant a 1-0 victory to England, which even necessitated the skillful Adam Lallana hitting the post. Did you see the game, Ian?
No, I didn't. I thought it was on the side of the truth. And I didn't. I heard that he scored a wonder goal, but it's his last game for Germany, isn't it?
And that's why there were so many celebrations afterwards, in which he was given the bumps, the bounce, all sorts
was
of
wonderful.
It was just a joy to behold in many ways. Yeah. I'm sure Ben would attest to that as well.
But I didn't watch it. I was on the train back from London, so I didn't.
You got mobile devices, did you?
I did, but I just. Didn't fancy it.
Yeah. Well, I suppose the Lithuania over the weekend. So that's exciting.
Probably be a bit more entertaining for Lithuania's perspective.
And if you're a Scottish supporter, well, Canada were unlucky. That's all I can say. So there we are.
Didn't Southgate experiment with three people at the back?
He's always experimenting. He's like some crazed elder brother to the Cowley brothers. Really, it's just quite amazing. Yeah, really, it's just astounding.
He used to manage Middlesbrough, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Yeah. In fact, he's the captain of Middlesbrough's sole trophy, the League Cup against Bolton.
That's right, yes.
Back in the day, and also the glorious McLaren-inspired journey through to the final of the old UEFA Cup, which they lost.
Yes, I remember that now, yes. And, they've had more success than we've had recently.
Yeah, they are indeed the last North East side to actually win a trophy, Ian.
So,
despite what happens to be going on in the Championship and the fact that clearly you'd say, well, you know, Middlesbrough and Sunderland and possibly Hull will be replaced by the Toon Army in a matter of weeks from now. But I can see Holly's already glazing over, so let's ask Holly what she's been doing and why already she's extorted finance from the Midweek Drive simply for the good cause of putting an X on a map somewhere. So, Holly, what's this all about, please?
I was doing a bit of fundraising, going to Peru with the charity Future Sense Foundation, which enables charities and workers to actually do sustainable work and make sure they are making a difference in poorer countries that need support, really.
Which is very good. And how can somebody like Ian, or indeed our listener, effectively support similar projects and so on? What can they do?
Well, if you have a bit of intrigue, you can always check the internet. I'm sure you can find a lot of research on that. But I've got a Virgin Money giving page. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you're really interested, you mm-hmm. could get in touch there. Mm-hmm.
So they have to listen to the podcast again and access that and all the details have been provided.
Yes, of course, that's the access.
Marvellous. We will be talking, as I say, about health routines in Africa and a whole variety of other things as the second part of the production continues. But Ian, are you a man who actually takes his toast simply as plain toast? Do you prefer to have butter?
No.
Margarine? Are you
butter and honey on mine.
Butter and honey?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Really? You're not. You see, you've even caused Ben to blaspheme there. It's bad enough he's been sort of coughing around the whole sort of base, basically.
Apologise.
You know, exactly. As long as you put your hand in front of the mouth, it gets out. Yeah, it's exactly. Just coughs and sneezes spread diseases. Mm. Ian's young enough to remember that one. But in terms of
Butter and honey,
you're not a fan.
Well, it's the. I don't mind it. You've got to have one or the other. I don't like having the butter and something on. I feel like it's a double. It's a clash. It's a clash.
What about butter, honey, and banana?
Oh, no, God,
ooh,
no.
Yes. Oh, yes.
I like butter and Marmite.
Butter and Marmite, there's
a profound point, this. Yeah. It's a very subjective process, this, but yet people have opinions about it. Just live and let live, I think.
It's like how you take your tea.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And do you put the milk in first?
Oh, God, no.
No.
You've got to do the proper way.
So you actually the milk in after as opposed to milk in first?
Yeah. Yeah.
After the tea bag's been taken out as well.
And another profound question is, which end do you cut the egg at? The blunt or the narrow end? Or the sharp end?
As Jonathan Swift actually wrote a whole thesis of that.
The war, wasn't it?
Yeah, they had a war as to which end you actually sort of open that egg from. I mean, heaven only knows if we actually were to put that to the current incumbent of the White House. Maybe you should actually approach Liz Brewer, you know, to actually sort of provide a bridging sort of source.
He'd probably call it fake news, ain't?
Yeah. Well, that, I mean, perfection. Any sign of the roofer as yet, Ian?
No.
He was very punctual a couple of weeks ago. It was all sorted out there. We thought, oh,
it was,
this is great. But, you know, clearly, you know, you're into a totally different environment on that basis.
Yeah. I think I'm going to put on my Facebook thing, 4 children and a roof to support.
Once again, he's just coming out with those cutting-edge headlines in just so many magical ways. Hannah, because clearly after the news you have the excitement of delivering the weather.
I'm ecstatic in anticipation.
We're trying to keep some rain out of the northeast, will you?
Do my best.
Do we care about that? Do we care about the north? Of course we care about the northeast. We care about every part of the world and so on. And effectively, I'll be up there actually myself in the not-too-distant future. In fact, tomorrow, actually, sort of dealing with Saltburn, which is the northeast as well.
One you've gone to
that area. Yeah, exactly. It's another Book of the Month live, Ian.
I did those.
And I'm sure you will do one as well again. Billy Joel will be taking us up to the news after a little smidgen of the Travelling Wilburys, the super band, of course, that comprised George Harrison, Jeff Lynne, Roy, who was the man?
The Rovers?
Roy Orbison, easily. Except, obviously, Roy Orbison would never have actually sort of got into Manchester Rovers side. Hannah, last two questions, please.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning?
I have, yes.
And will you be joining us again next week?
I do hope so, with a secure roof.
And toast.
Probably have fish cake on next week.
Fish cake? Yeah. Are you already planning ahead, you see?
I would have had one today, but I thought I couldn't because it would be too difficult to cook the fish cake and talk to you at the same time.
Yeah, multitasking, that's a step beyond. Ian, we salute you. Fluttering Sunday, it's a somewhat startling fact that 3 in 5 British folk are actually becoming immune to what they conceive as charity porn campaign images. And perhaps, with respect to Mothering Sunday, the fact that complications in pregnancy and childbirth will claim one woman every 90 seconds. And the World Health Organization has shown that 99% of maternal and reproductive deaths occur in the developing world, as 225 million women who do not wish to fall pregnant can't access adequate reproductive health services. Now, to address this and hopefully sort of point some indications in terms of future help and assistance that we can actually provide, we're delighted to be able to welcome the Chief Executive Officer for Amref Health Africa, Francis Longley. Good morning, Francis.
Good morning, Alex. How are you doing?
Very well indeed. And Vicky Bamba, also from Amref Health Africa. Good morning, Vicky.
Good morning.
Francis, if we can come to your good self, because one tends to think, look, here we are, second decade of the 21st century, heading towards the third, and still we're having this challenge where, you know, people are dying needlessly.
It's true, and it is completely needless. Most of these deaths are entirely preventable. 99% of maternal deaths happen in developing countries, and that tells you what you need to know. It's to do with lack of resources. If they had the kind of resources we have, these women would live.
And we talked about this dreadful term called charity porn, and people actually sort of feeling, oh, I can't possibly cope with this. There does seem to be a bit of a cynical edge appearing, not only with students that I actually teach at the University of Lincoln, but the sort of sense that, oh, it's another campaign and so on. Is that the fault of the media? Is it the fault of social media? Is it a case of, you know, people are literally in these times of austerity and uncertainty kind of thinking, oh, we can't cope with another charity appeal?
Do you know, it's really interesting, because if you look at what happens with the British public, they're more generous than ever. We've been through a few years now of really tough times economically, and people are still giving really generously to charity. And what's changing is that people want to connect in a real way with the people that they're supporting. So what we're finding is people don't want to see these kind of somewhat over-the-top, dehumanising images of people in extreme poverty or extreme suffering. What they want to do is connect with people, understand people's circumstances, and find a way to help them.
Vicky, in terms of looking at the global perspective, I mean, reproductive health, you know, clearly if we want to have the next generation coming through from that point of view, why is it such a serious issue right across the developing world? I mean, especially obviously for young girls.
It is a really, really serious issue across the developing world, and women in sub-Saharan Africa particularly vulnerable to maternal deaths, to ill health because of low income, social status, a lack of education and traditional gender roles. And that's something that our charity, Amref Health Africa, is really trying to address. So we work specifically through women and girls with communities from the ground up to try and fix this issue and make their lives better.
Images are obviously very powerful, very important messages. I mean, the 20th century is arguably the decade of the photographic and televisual image, etc. The 21st continues ever onwards. Dean Bradshaw has connected with your good selves. How is he actually working with the partnership with Amref Health Africa? Francis?
We're really excited to be working with Dean. Dean's a very, very successful commercial photographer from LA. He's recently been working with Hugh Jackman. He has a much more glamorous life than I do. And he is a great supporter of Amref Health Africa. So he came with us to Kenya last year, completely free of charge. And we put him on a very cheap plane at minimal expense and took him all the way to Kenya and took him around the country so that he could take photographs of African women who depicted themselves as they wanted to be seen. So very simple process. We tacked up a white sheet and took photographs of them, and they could bring with them whatever they wanted to bring, wear whatever they wanted to wear. And they just told their own stories, both in terms of having their photographs taken and then talking. And we did interviews with all of them and really got their own take on what difference it makes to them to have access to good quality, available healthcare, which has changed their lives. You know, these are women who are making their own choices about when they have children. They've got good health facilities for those children when they're born. And, you know, if you're healthy and your children are healthy, your children go to school, you get to go to school, you get to go to work. And, you know, it's a kind of virtuous circle, really. So it's really exciting to work with Dean. He's done the most amazing photos.
positivity begets positivity, which is clearly a sort of aspect in terms of how, you know, again, you can actually sort of promote that positivity and hopefully sort of continue to improve. Vicky, do you get a sense that actually, you know, despite the way we kind of launched this particular piece, that, you know, the future is optimistic, that we can look forward to hopefully improvements? I mean, again, if we can work through that, and again, how can people actually find out more details about the excellent work that Amref Health Africa are actually involved with?
Oh, thank you. I think that the future is looking brighter. I think what we want to do as a charity is to help share the work that we do and tell these people's stories here in the UK, because, as Francis said, people are more generous than ever. And what we want to do is bring people in Africa a little bit closer to us. But it is looking bright. It is looking positive. We're helping millions and millions of people every year, as are other charities as well. And I think it's just a case of telling these stories the way that they want to be told, which is actually going to give better outcomes for everyone. And if anyone wants any further information, our photo series for our Champion African Women campaign has actually been launched today. You can go to www.amrefuk.org. We're also on all social media as well, so it would be great for people to check us out and get in touch.
It's been a genuine delight sharing some thoughts with your good selves about some of the challenges that face us all as we continue to float through space on spaceship Earth, shall we say. to Francis Langley, Chief Executive Officer, of course, of Amref Health Africa, and Vicky Bamba, many thanks indeed. Hopefully we'll speak again in the not-too-distant future, ladies, and actually continue the excellent work that Amref Health Africa are actually involved with.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Louis Savvy, director of Sci-Fi London Film Festival. You're listening to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition on Siren FM.
Do you notice the way, Louis, we managed to... Oh, there we are. We managed to... Start all over again. We managed to effectively talk about Spaceship Earth and sort of ease our way through that whole process there.
Well, you're a master of the segue, sir.
Oh, off my word. We are about to launch, at least as far as the studio team, of Holly McGrattan, Hannah Brown and Eva McDonald are concerned, and possibly Young Workplacement Holly, who's going to come in to actually sort of have a general... That's Ollie without the H. Sorry, I just wanted to work our way through that. We're about to launch the Facebook piece that you have shared thanks to James Edward Marks, Louis.
Uh-huh.
So that's very exciting. So would you like to explain exactly what's happening in this particular exciting opus of Sci-Fi London and yourself in glorious Technicolor?
If it's the video I think you're talking about, is it the one with the spaceman on my T-shirt?
Is that a spaceman on his T-shirt?
Yes. It is, yes.
It is, yes. So we were at the Youth Marketing Symposium earlier this week, talking about mixed up reality and AR, VR and all the other things that end with R. Mm. We bumped into this guy from, I think they're called Walking Projection, who had this lovely little handheld projector and was exciting everybody with that. And I thought, this can't miss an opportunity to have a spaceman rolling around next to our famous Sci-Fi London rocket. So that's what we did. And we had all sorts of other stuff done, and the HoloLens from Microsoft, and, you know, our usual Google Cardboard and all that kind of stuff, because we've got a new app coming out as part of the festival, a new 3D immersive VR experience. So we were just having some fun, really, playing with the toys.
It's just a classic case of sci-fi.
Exactly.
Well, we now have almost the entire team of 48-hour film challengers together, because clearly you've spoken to Holly and Hannah before. Eva's with us now, and Eva, all set and ready
Morning.
To get your phones and things out from that point of view. Hannah, share with us what stage you're at, because we have registered.
We are registered.
Yes.
With our team.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, good.
What I do have to do is, I think I've still got to choose the challenge. Oh. Obviously, because apparently there's more than one, so I've got to choose. Obviously,
yeah. There's a writing challenge and a filmmaking challenge, and you're doing the filmmaking one. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So
not a huge difficult choice to actually make there.
And it's written there in English in big letters.
Yeah,
that should help.
It should make it easier for you.
I would have thought so. I know it's a minor point, but what the heck. Sometimes, Louis, you just think, where are we going with this? Suffice to say, Hannah was on top form over the weekend with our own little symposium, which actually would have been perfect had you been with us, Louis. Had you been with us?
Unfortunately, it's anything in the 2 months leading up to
you're
the
not going to be leaving London.
Very, very little going. Yeah.
Let's look at some of these fabulous facts that you've shared with respect to Sci-Fi London. Holly, pick a fact about Sci-Fi London from what we've actually got there. What would you like to say about Sci-Fi London?
There were 1,287 films screened.
1,287 film screens.
So far. That information will be out of date come the 27th of April.
Well, of course, because there'll be many more by then. A little fact from yourself, Hannah?
67 alien species have been represented.
Yeah.
Yep, 60. And somebody did count them. We actually got someone put a cheeky little thing up on Facebook saying, did somebody really go through all those films and check? But actually, we keep tallies on things like alien species, number of gas masks we've seen, and all that kind of stuff. So just as a tip for your 48-hour project, try not to use a gas mask. We've seen lots and lots and lots of them. That'll be the update for the next infographic. Yeah.
So gas masks, put them to one hand. Keep them for Wednesday evening, possibly. But, you know, not on the sort of the actual challenge scenario.
Or use them over the weekend, but just don't film them.
Unless it's on the props list.
Of course. But I guess it's not. But actually, we don't. We did it one year, put a gas mask on there, and we wish we hadn't. And then ever since then, every time we see someone put a gas mask on and start to walk across a field, we just kind of sigh, really.
It's so First World War. It's so Battle of the Somme. You know, step away. Step away.
It's the most cliched way of saying there's been a post-apocalyptic incident, and you know the air's no good, and we're always looking for something a bit fresh. So
what is another way of implying there's been a post-apocalyptic kind of meltdown then?
That's a very good question.
She doesn't mess around us, Holly. No, she's on the case.
Yeah, well, I think probably a £10 million special effects budget. You want to sort of destroy part of a city. I mean, that always helps. Mm. But, I mean, the usual things we see are, you know, a gas mask, someone walking through a field with a rucksack on, someone in a bunker or in a building that's got all the windows smashed and so on. The thing for me that I find the most terrifying about any of those scenarios is the emptiness. So one of the ways that you could show it quite easy is just to get up really early and go somewhere that's particularly busy. I don't know if you remember the classic opening to 28 Days Later, which everyone was going on about because they managed to close Tottenham Court Road. And actually, they filmed it on a Sunday morning at about 5:30. When they were able to just, you know, there'd only been a dozen cars or so, they managed to close it and they had an hour window to film him walking up and around Piccadilly and Tottenham Court Road. I think in all good post-apocalyptic scenarios, when there's no one else around, that's pretty scary. Okay. And quite easy to do.
It's a bit like Lincoln, you know, at 6 a.m. in the morning. It's very, very scary. Unbelievably so. Time for the little rider that comes in for our next contributor.
Singer, scholar, festival ambassador, and midweek drivette. It's Eva MacDonald on the Midweek Drive.
Eva, your facts, please.
You know what? I can't actually read the screen from here because I need glasses. So Holly's going to have to read them out for me.
Eva, would you like to know how old Sci-Fi London is?
I would, yes.
17 English years. I particularly like the fact that there have been 17 time travels at the festival. You see, it's symbolic. Nice. You know,
one a year every year. Although that could be an alternative fact, as it says on the in very small writing underneath. So
that's very true.
It's very small writing.
Sci-Fi, you know, I'm still chasing up with those people at the social media search, which begins with face and ends in book, that the pre-2015 photographs seem to just be vanished. You know, they've replied several times and thanked me for that, but, you know...
Oh, dear.
I know. It's the thing. I mean, revealing it now, because they've had over 48 hours to actually get it sorted, in fact, over a week since we actually sort of had this challenge last year, but the world's only science fiction cosplay for dogs is actually up from that point of view. There have been actually 3,586 exoplanets found since Sci-Fi London started.
And again, that's probably out of date already. I imagine that we've already picked up a few more. So, but that's I find that's actually a really interesting piece of data, mm. because you know it was always speculative. You know, up until very recently, actually, that there were any planets. You know, we all thought that was very possible, mm-hmm. but there was no evidence. You know, yeah. and now we're finding them almost on a daily basis. You know, and there are some Goldilocks planets. You know, there are some that are in the sweet spot, as it were.
Just
that,
right, exactly.
That, yeah, that could well
have another Louis Savvy. And another midnight
drive. We
could have
67 different alien species.
Speaking
turn up.
At this moment, sort of saying, what's it all about? Louis. 31 types of spacecraft have been represented in Sci-Fi of London, 51 films about time travel, and there have been 5,860 Earth rotations since the festival started.
And again, that is already out of date.
Out of date, exactly, because the world has not stopped. It is continuing in its own routine.
Exactly, exactly. I think we finished that graphic about 15 days ago, so you can add 15 to that, and, you know, by tomorrow, 16, and on you go.
I was very lucky a couple of weeks ago to be invited to interview Adrian Tchaikovsky, winner, of course, of the Arthur C. Clarke Award mm-hmm. for Children of Time last year. And the Arthur C. Clarke Award is also being hosted at this year's Sci-Fi London Festival as well, Louis.
Well, we have a permanent seat on the jury,
yes.
And a part of the Clarke Awards, mm. Which is a great honour for us. Actually, though, we don't host it at the festival anymore. We've moved it so that the event is now held in the middle of the year, so
nice.
It'll be July.
That's okay.
And it's normally held at Foyles now, so we do it, you know, in central London, in the heart of the, you know, best bookshop in town. So
we may well try to be there, if that's okay, Louis, and hopefully sort of
it'll be fantastic.
Come down and
record that, and we will have the shortlist announcement during the festival, however. So at the moment, there's only the long list available, which is about 140 books, I think. And then sometime during the festival, we will announce the six books that have been shortlisted.
Last week, Hannah was given the task by one of the organisers of the Seattle Prisoner Convention to watch the episodes of The Prisoner. You've seen two of them, have you not, so far?
Yes, the first two, Arrival yes. and The Chimes of Big Ben.
The Chimes of Big Ben.
Mm-hmm.
So gradually, as Phil Leina said last night, introducing The Prisoner, Louis, to people one episode at a time. You know, 17 episodes, 50 years. So working out. Were you a particular big Prisoner fan at all, Louis?
I was a big Prisoner fan. I just, I'm more of a connoisseur of it now, I think, than I was, you know, when I first saw it, I was probably 18, 19, I think, when it had done a rerun, and it was all right, you know, but I was much interested in other things at the time. But, you know, now looking back at it, you know, in terms of its story and its styling, I still think it's a fantastic show. And if there are any listeners out there who haven't yet visited Port Merion, you absolutely have to go there, because it is the strangest place. Absolutely strange. And most of the show is filmed there.
Which is one of the reasons why we've often thought that the Louis Savvy ident for when the official film festival Sci-Fi London is launched should be something like...
Good people, it is my pleasure to present to you the one and only... Number six,
Louis Savvy. There we are. See what we did there.
I'm not a number.
He's a free man. Exactly. Alternatively,
you are a born survivor. I am a born killer.
We were made for each other. But I fear this is where it must end. Your reflexes cannot save you now.
Quite right too. Louis, we have a work placement soul in the studio who, when he actually came in, was introduced by Ryan Jones, I believe on Monday of this very week, as the Earth continues its rotation around the sun, talking about Doctor Who and various other bits and pieces. Ollie, welcome to the programme. Eva might pass the microphone slightly to your good self so we can actually hear his dulcet tones live on air. Ollie, how many English years do you have to your credit?
Well, I'm 14.
Nice, that's what we like to hear. He knows. He sees,
14.
Yeah, 14 Turanian years that he's sort of been working through on this basis. So actually, you weren't even born when Sci-Fi London started.
Well, no.
17 years ago. So minus three. You would have been minus three in that particular year. In fact, you're the only person in the studio born in the 21st century.
Wow, you're just trying to make us feel old now.
We're just chronologically gifted, you know. We have kind of crossed the centuries, you know. Ollie, he just knows the 21st century.
So. Unless he was born beforehand and time travelled into the century.
No,
I like where you're going with this stuff now.
My mind is 12 birthdays like it was yesterday.
So from your own perspective, are you a science fiction fan, Ollie?
Yeah, I do.
Right. Any particular areas that you particularly like?
What, in like film or... Mm. Well, I don't know, I've always been like a fan of film, TV and like game-wise for all sci-fi, really.
Mm. So some names here?
Good man, I can see a bright future for you.
But I liked Alien, obviously Star Wars and stuff like that. Mm.
So 26th of April, you should be celebrating LV-426 Day. Do you know about that?
No, I don't.
Right, so it actually doesn't work very well for the Brits, because we write the 26th of April as 26-4, but the Americans, it's 4-26. And if you know your franchise well, the planet where it all kicked off was called LV-426. So whilst we have May the 4th, being Star Wars Day, we now have... The 26th of April being Alien Day.
Yeah.
There we are. Yeah. So there'll be some celebrations going all over the world with that, and there may be some sneaks coming out about the new Alien Covenant as well.
The new film looks quite good.
Mm. Of course, technically, as well as being slightly off microphone, he's too young to have ever been allowed to see the Alien franchise.
He should not.
I mean, I don't know what his parents were thinking, but for goodness sakes, you know.
Time travel, Alex. Time travel.
Exactly.
You've called that yet again.
Unless, of course, like Benjamin Button, he was, you know, perhaps you're going backwards. Maybe next year he'll be 13.
This is very true. He's actually a very senior citizen and living life retrospectively on that basis. He wasn't expecting this. No one expected Louis Savvy Inquisition. Is that right? It'll all sort of work out. How can people find out about Sci-Fi London on the web, Louis?
They go to scifilondon.com. They Google Sci-Fi London. They'll find us. We're on YouTube and Vimeo and Facebook and our own website. We're Twittering. We're not difficult to find. Oh. Just type in Sci-Fi London. You'll find it.
And now you actually know, Hannah, in terms of it's the film challenge, not the literary challenge. You're ready to get that sorted through there. So the next stage is presumably, Louis, the reveal of what they actually will be working on over the weekend of, I believe, the 7th and 8th of April. The 8th and 9th of April.
Saturday the 8th of April, and delivery of the finished thing back on the 10th to us. Mm. Saturday morning, about 11 o'clock, they should log into their account online, and they'll then find the four pieces of information that we have randomly selected for them. And in fact, we've been busy over the last couple of weeks writing fictitious film titles, which is actually much tougher than you think, trying to come up with things that haven't been made into a film or a book. And most years somebody comes back and says, hang on a minute, there's already a film called that.
And let's face it, if it wasn't for the Sci-Fi London 48-Hour Film Challenge, no director for Godzilla, no director for Star Wars The Force Awakens, no Gareth Edwards.
Exactly. You know, so he just thought, I'll have a go at making a film, saw our challenge and took part, and, you know, the rest was history, as they say.
Or time travel. Last two questions for Louis, please. Holly.
Louis, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning?
Of course I have.
And will we be able to talk to you next week, maybe?
I think next week sounds like a good plan.
Hey, cool. A lot of time travelling. We might have already been there and done it again.
It was a great interview.
It's superb.
Any kind of confusion, Holly has left the studio, leaving Ollie as the sole person to be scrutinised, in every scrutineer's sense, by Hannah and Eva. So I think, Eva, you might have to ensure that Ollie is fully in front of the microphone, or you might move the microphone
along. Was he not squished down?
He wasn't quite, so he just needs to move it along so he's quite clearly there and you can project clearly. You get your own microphones. So who would like to start off the interrogation? Hannah?
I'm a lovely person, so I don't really like to interrogate.
It's good cop, bad cop, isn't it? Good presenter, bad presenter.
Why am I a bad presenter?
Are you trying to say something here?
I'm not assigning roles, Hannah. Take it away.
So, Ollie, why did you choose to come and do work experience at Siren?
Well, I've always been into, a while ago, I was into, filmmaking and stuff. I've always been doing that since I was little, and then I developed, wanted to be a film director, and then kind of went to film industry, and my dad suggested radio. I'd have a look at that so I could decide which route I kind of want to go down. So I saw Siren FM and wanted to go here.
Have you had a favourite experience so far?
It's been good. It's all been good. I haven't had, a particular favourite, but it's been really good.
It's not the show.
it hasn't finished yet,
Midweek Drive.
We've got to pull something out of the bag to have an explosive finish almost to the show.
We do.
Yeah.
We need ideas.
Yeah, ideas. What could we do to make this your favourite experience of your work experience?
I don't know.
Okay.
Have we finished then?
Possibly. We're going to brainstorm now.
Oh. It was short but sweet.
Maybe we could play his favourite song.
Does he have a favourite song?
Do you have a favourite song?
I do not have a particular favourite song.
Well, he doesn't have a particular favourite song. Stop talking about him in the third person.
I don't know. I like a lot of... For the age I was born, I like a lot of weird songs. I like Queen a lot.
We can find a Queen song.
I like Queen.
Queen is good.
Extraordinary, actually. Because of the age he was born, he likes a lot of different songs.
It's mainly because my parents just play all this music in the house. Mm. All this, old music, and I know them all.
It's a bit like Ian Lennox and country music, isn't it, really? The sort of
bringing
concert,
him round to the loving country.
The Miracle, I'm Going Slightly Mad, The Show Must Go On, A Kind of Magic, Dancing Queen, Stop Me When You're Ready, Ollie, whenever.
Is Killer Queen there?
Is Killer Queen there? Yes, it is there, actually. So is that going to be your musical choice for today?
Yeah, that'll be my musical choice for the day.
Ooh.
She keeps a Moët Chandon in a pretty cabinet. Anthony cakes, she says, just like Marie Antoinette. A building remedy for Khrushchev and Kennedy. At a time of imitation, you can't decline. Caviar and cigarettes, well versed in etiquette, extraordinarily nice. She's a killer queen, gunpowder, gelatin. Guaranteed to blow your mind. Ooh, recommended at the price. Insatiable and appetite. Wanna try? To avoid complications, she never kept the same address. In conversation, she spoke just like a baroness. Middleman from China. She might have been again incidentally in that way. Love you came naturally from Paris. Naturally.
she could care less, fastidious and precise.
She's a killer queen, gunpowder gelatine, dynamite with a laser beam,
guaranteed to blow your mind. Momentarily out of action, temporarily out of class, so absolutely dry. She's out to get you.
She's a killer queen, gunpowder gelatine, dynamite with a laser beam,
guaranteed to blow your mind. Recommended at the best, insatiable and appetite.
Wanna try?
It's often said healthy mind, healthy body, and recent research carried out by Nestle Waters reveals that school is the biggest pressure on 10 to 14-year-olds, with 63% of children citing homework, another 44% citing general school pressures as the reason behind feelings of stress. Now, today we're celebrating World Water Day, and Nestle Waters is encouraging parents and children to get out and engage with their natural environment. As we said, healthy mind, healthy body, to address some of the key issues and the relationship between mental well being and nature, and the ways in which wildlife trusts can actually promote mental health being and so on. We're delighted to be able to welcome the ace personification of joy and happiness in the countryside. It's Mark Whitlock. How are you, Mark?
I'm fine, thank you. Good morning.
Mark, this notion of nature and mental well being, it seems, no pun intended, to be a bit of a no-brainer, that actually getting out of an urban environment, actually seeing some greenery, getting out into the countryside, getting some fresh air in one's lungs, etc., It's got to be a way of actually improving your lot in life and reducing stress.
Absolutely, yes. I think there are a lot of benefits to being outside, and we live, and particularly our children live, very sedentary lives now, and it's important that we get outside. And there is this link, and it is well established now that when we are in the outdoors and we are engaging with nature, we do feel better about ourselves. There is an effect on our mental well-being, and It is a thing.
In terms of the Wildlife Trust, I mean, clearly we hear a great deal about this whole sort of system. Talk to us more about Project WET.
Project WET. Well, Project WET is Nestle Waters has been working with Project WET for many years, and it gets really people in schools just to learn a little bit about water, about the need to preserve it, to protect it for the future, and so that's being spun out. And also that's how Nestle is celebrating UN World Water Day today. It's sort of celebrated every year on the 22nd of March, and that's a long-standing relationship that they have with Project WET. And that's but yeah, sorry.
No, look, I mean, just looking at some of the research, it seems that parents are only spending on average 2.5 hours a week outside with their children. Is this something which you would encourage families to get more involved with as well? And I know it can be a very stressful time across the base, but if you can, take a few hours across the weekends to sort of experience the great outdoors.
Absolutely, get out there. It's it's something. I mean, I work with children all the time, and just to see the joy on their faces, and it does have a positive effect on them. And those statistics that we saw earlier, this is the way that our young children can get out there and relieve some of those stresses, some of the symptoms of anxiety and stress that they're feeling. And there is so much we can do. And it is such a wonderful thing to get out there. And just yesterday I was working with a group of children. We were pond dipping, and they had to be almost dragged from the side of the pond. They were enjoying it so much. I mean, in terms of what we're doing with the Derbyshire Wildlife Trust, we don't have to work hard at it. Nature really does all the work for us.
if people are actually listening to this and thinking, yes, we want to get involved with Project WET, we want to find out more about the Wildlife Trust and so on, what's the best place to actually go to for further information?
Well, for further information, you know, there are 47 wildlife trusts in the country, and if you just go on to their website, put in your postcode, and you'll be able to find your nearest one. And there's plenty going on, and yeah, get out this weekend.
And were you a little surprised at all in terms of the that headliner, 87% of British 10-year-olds admit to feeling stressed? I mean, did you feel stressed if you think back to the day, sort of pre-teenage adolescent routine, or was it a case of it's part of living in the 21st century, unfortunately?
No, I think we're perhaps a very different world, I mean, back then, and you know, we were used to being outside, you know, and perhaps that's something we have left behind, you know, and perhaps it's down to, you know, the devices that we all have in our homes now that mean we spend more time on them, you know, and yeah, I think it's something that perhaps we need to retrain our children in. It's something that perhaps we don't do naturally anymore.
And finally, any particular advice that you'd actually provide in terms of just sort of where people should actually go if they're, you know, listening to this, maybe online, and they're maybe up in Scotland or Wales. Is a similar thing occurring there with respect to obviously the British Isles?
Absolutely, all over. So, you know, just get out there. And there are lots of places you can go. I mean, and if you find your local wildlife trust, they have a, go onto one of their reserves, you know, they're free.
And that can't be bad in any way, shape or form.
Absolutely.
Free reserves and a joyous way of actually combining with nature as well. Mark Whitlock from the Wildlife Trust, many thanks indeed.
Thank you very much.
They got back down, but they got up again, as somebody would obviously say. And if you're looking at resilience, well, clearly there is a desire to be more resilient across the nation. It's important to actually ensure that it's you get back on the horse and so on and so forth. So when you're talking resilience, what better way to actually address this issue than to actually have a dynamic duo of resilient folk? First of all, the truly legendary Renaissance woman, who is Julia Bradbury. Good morning, Julia. How are you?
Good morning, Alex. Gosh, what a fantastic introduction. After that, I'm feeling very resilient and bouncy. Thank you.
Absolutely essential. And, of course, in equally dynamic mode, leading psychologist, Director of Psychological Services for the AXA PPP Health Services Division, Dr. Mark Winwood. How are you, Mark?
Good morning. I'm very well, thank you very much. Very well indeed.
Excellent. Julia, if we come to you first, because, I mean, we were fortunate enough to connect with you on a CLA Game Fair a wee while ago. You'll have forgotten all about it, but it was wonderful.
I remember the lovely Game Fair. Yes.
Exactly. Tremendous. But, I mean, that was when I think one of the topics we were talking about then was actually the importance of actually getting out and about, taking a walk, you know, working through that whole process, really actually ensuring that, you know, when occasionally we're faced with challenges in life, sometimes the best thing to do is to kind of, you know, have at it again, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all, Alex, I think we all hope and strive to lead relatively happy, rewarding lives. But the reality is, at some stages, we are going to be struck by hardship and face difficulties. So it's quite key that we learn how to cope with these issues that are going to face us, and tackle it head on. So research has been conducted by over 2,000 individuals, and 62% of the Brits who were asked by AXA PPP said that they want to build their ability to bounce back from setbacks, and 72% feel that resilience is a skill that can be developed. And I would absolutely agree with that. One thing I think is, as you get older, you do become more resilient. There's no surprise in that, really, because as you become older, you face more of life experiences, and you really learn how to deal with these and use different coping mechanisms to deal with them. But resilience is important for all of us, even for little ones in the school playground.
Absolutely. Mark, I mean, turning to your good self, I must admit, I had a wry smile when I saw the concept of Generation Snowflake, which is emerging. A third of younger adults said fear of what faces them in the future is behind their desire to build their resilience, mm-hmm. and so on. So obviously thinking ahead for it from that perspective. Presumably you'd echo what Julie was saying there in terms of, OK, we're not necessarily talking about doing the Iron Man challenge on a regular daily basis, really, so as we go various peaks around the country, but actually ensuring that you can actually cope with everything, I suppose, really, from the point of view of bereavement, the death of a favourite hamster, for instance, onwards.
Absolutely. And what Julia mentioned already is that these skills can be developed and these skills can be learned as well. And we've established that perhaps, you know, as we get a little bit older, we do perhaps naturally, by virtue of life experience, become a little bit more resilient. But actually, what can we learn perhaps from older people to perhaps also coach younger generations, the millennials, have you mentioned already? What can we do? What can we do in order to actually support millennials to become a little bit more resilient? I mean, clearly there are pressures in life at the moment, political changes, financial changes, social changes that are going to impact resilience for younger generations. But there are certain things that we can do to help bolster our resilience, and as you say, bounce back from some of these difficulties and difficult challenges.
Julia, returning to your good self, I'm trying to say, obviously, good genetics. If you've got a combination of Derbyshire and Greece in your background, then, you know, obviously it's going to be a winning combination. But in terms of that, from your own practicalities, what sort of areas would have kind of assisted your good self in the journey of life that we're all on?
Well, I think I've learned a few things. I mean, I've been around for a long, long time, so I've had a very interesting and varied career, and I've been put into all sorts of interesting challenges as well during the course of my career. So a couple of things stand out for me. One thing, several years ago, I took part in a documentary for the BBC called Ultimate Rock Climb, and rather foolishly, I agreed to learn how to rock climb, which I'd never done before, in a matter of weeks. I think it was an 8 to 12 week period. And my final challenge at the end of that series was a 60 metre sea stack that was plunging out of the sea in Scotland, and I had to get to the top of that. It was a 7 or 8 hour ordeal, and I will call it that. And there was a point during that experience where I got stuck. I was resting in a cubbyhole under a ledge, and I genuinely didn't feel that I was going to be able to continue with this experience. I was petrified. I was very high up. I was suffering from exposure. There were birds spitting at me. There was a television crew watching me cry as well, which made me feel even worse. So I had a 40-minute blubbing period where I really released all of my emotions. I cried, and then I remember very clearly that key moment in my life when I said to myself, I am not going to fail. I am not going to get stuck here in the middle and not accomplish this. I set out to get to the top of this, and I am going to make it to the top. And it definitely was a key moment where I overcame a fear, and I turned something in my brain, because I didn't really have the physical ability or the skills, but it was something that I overcame in my brain to make sure that I did get to the top. And I did manage the top of that sea stack, and I'm very proud of that moment. But I'm most proud of that key change and that moment when I thought myself out of the problem. And I think that's one thing that we can all learn, is to be more positive, to believe in ourselves, to believe that we can enforce change within ourselves and that we can overcome obstacles. It's very easy to be negative. It's just as easy to be positive. So that's one of my great life tips, if you like.
Mark, from your own perspective, I must admit that when one deals with students, the two words I always say, never ever use them, are I can't. Never use them. Just avoid them completely.
Completely.
Is that something which, again, resonates with what Julie's just been saying? And of
Absolutely.
Course...
In my experience as a psychologist, I work with a lot of people, and actually just adjusting or giving an opportunity to perhaps see things in a slightly more positive way. Shifting perspective is absolutely one of my top tips when helping people see beyond the difficulties that they might be facing. So shifting perspective, building intelligence a little bit by accepting what we are feeling rather than trying to hide from it are two really, really important factors when it comes to building our resilience. But also doing some exercise, you know, doing that rock climbing.
It doesn't have to be rock climbing.
It doesn't.
I'm a big advocate of walking as well, obviously, and that's something that we're trying to encourage people to do as well here. AXA PPP Healthcare have got lots of good advice on the website. They've got a challenge called Walk.
Hashtag Walk 30.
Yeah, Walk 30. And basically what they're saying is try and walk for 30 minutes 5 times a week. If you can do that, it might not seem as if that's an activity that's going to build your mental resilience, but it's proven time and time again that exercise exercise does help. And I've interviewed lots of people in high-pressured jobs, and the common theme amongst all of the people that I've interviewed is they all take some sort of exercise. And walking is one of the most accessible and easy ways to engage in that.
Indeed. So you've already mentioned the Walk 30 challenge, hashtag Walk 30, if you wish to use the wonderful sort of modern devices. Also, presumably, AXA, ppphealthcare.co.uk/resilience will be a good place to go to.
Absolutely. That's where you'd get the top five tips on building resilience and developing those extra skills.
Well, I'd also put in a special plug for juliabradbury.com, because I think it's an ace and inspirational website in its own way. So there we are.
Thank you very much, Alex.
A sort of clear thing from that perspective. Just in terms of wrapping up this whole sort of sequence, Julie, you provided us with some of your top tips for building resilience and working through on that particular perspective. Mark, are you a walker? Are you a hiker? Are you a rock climber? Is it a case of no, I prefer to cycle?
I'm definitely a walker, most absolutely a walker, but I'm also a big fan of getting sufficient sleep and sufficient rest, so that'd be another top tip from me. And finally, is really building our relationships and our connections and nurturing those friendships that are so important to us. They really, really do help us build our resilience.
Value your friends and your family. They are absolutely key to mental resilience.
And perhaps also, just for the folk who might be saying, oh yes, we can't do that sort of walk. Take those small steps to get along the way would probably be the best way. Don't necessarily feel as though, yes, you're going to actually do the John O'Groats to Land's End walk, you know, every week, effectively.
Yeah, I think sometimes as well, I think people tend to, they make lists for themselves. They have goals for themselves every day, and they make those lists too long. If you set yourself up for a fall, that's not necessarily going to help you. So as you say, baby steps, and don't try and overreach.
It's been a sensational, and I knew it was going to be inspirational right at the start, item with both of you fine folk. Two final questions for your good self. It's what we call our kind of customer satisfaction scenario. First of all, Julia, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Reasonably, more than reasonably, exceptional, I would say.
And Mark, is that echoed with your good self?
I've enjoyed every moment. Thank you very much.
Well, in which case, can we hopefully prevail upon both of you to return in the not-too-distant future and keep us inspired and taking those steps to the future and, of course, enhancing our resilience.
You certainly can. And a big hello to all of your listeners, Alex.
Well, listener, Julia, we don't want to go too much on this whole system. Marvellous. It's the Midweek Drive morning. A matter of seconds before we're up to the news from the Sky News Centre. And we say farewell. Sad, isn't it, in many ways?
But so sad.
There's another show already and working to be bursting from the ether in about 7 days' time from now. We thank our team, of course, Ben Lewis early in the production, Holly McGrattan as well, Hannah Brown, Eve McDonald and Ollie. We don't really get his surname, but then do we really need it?
Nicholson.
Oh, Ollie Nicholson.
There we go.
Nice. Thanks to Gabriella Peralta from Gibraltar, Richard Fitzwilliams, of course, in London, Ian Lennox in Tyneside, Louis Savvy, as ever, on top form, Mark Whitlock from WET. Yes, it's a wonderful organisation to actually get out and about, etc., which is exactly what Victoria and Francis were talking about with respect to AmHealth Africa. And, of course, Julia Bradbury and the wonderful psychologist, Dr. Mark Winwood, for enhancing resilience. You know, it's important that we work on our resilience and work through that. So, do you think you should put that question to Oliver?
Which question?
Well, you know, has it been the best experience?
Yes, have
or
you
what?
Had a telephonic link that's been enjoyable?
He hasn't had a telephonic link, really. So,
a microphone link to Siren FM.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Have you enjoyed your time?
It has been very enjoyable.
Good.
Ooh. That's it. Yeah. Sorted. Hannah will be back. Eva will be back. You might even hear Eva on one of the Wednesday slots before too long. Next Thursday, it's the Lincoln Agricultural Society's wonderful day, because they'll be having a little mini takeover with this production. And we'll be getting Rosie Crust along to talk about Countryside Links, which I gather, Eva, you will be coming along too.
I can come. If it's a Sunday, I can definitely come.
As well as having sorted our filming bits out beforehand, you see. So all you see, that's the weekend where we have Sci-Fi Scarborough, we have the 48-hour film challenge, we have the Countryside Links event. Just so much goodness to pack into the whole sequence. It's just, frankly,
going to be an exciting time.
It's going to be just wonderful. So the pre-Easter run-up. It's also Palm Sunday as well. Okay, as far as Siren's concerned as well, later on today, 7 o'clock, you can listen to tapes almost live, as lies recorded last Sunday, of course, and transmitted at the end of the Stone Tape Symposium. You get a chance to access to the whole show, so that's going to be exciting, isn't it?
Yes, very.
Sam Stone and friends will be developing all sorts of things there. That's it. We're out of here. Stay tuned to Siren. It brings you a whole heap of good material as the day proceeds. Can we say bye-bye?
Bye.
Bye.
Love me sweet. never let me go. You have made my life complete, and I love you so. Love me tender, love me true, all my dreams fulfill. For my